Well, speaking of buddies, here's one of our buddies on the Super Celebrity Hotline right now, Michael Steele. He is, of course, long-suffering head of the Republican National Committee. And, you know what I did here today, Michael?
What's that?
I did for the first time in my life as a voter. And I've been voting, you know, since I was 18 years old, or maybe even 17 and a half. I think they let us do that back then, too. My first vote ever was for a Chicago. Was in the mayoral election in Chicago, the Harold Washington election. I'm almost old enough to do the George Washington election. It's one of those empowering moments, man. It's just such a great feeling to get, you know, to be able to take part in it. But today, and I voted for Harold Washington in that election. And, you know, proudly so. And today I had to vote for a guy that I didn't want to win the election. I just wanted him to beat the guy I really don't want to win the election. Now, how does that, what is wrong with democracy when that happens, Michael Steele?
I was going to say that's like pretty much every election for some time now.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Well, you know all these people personally, so it is the worst of all evils for you. But I still want to believe in some of this.
Well, look, first off, I got to give props to the man sitting next to you. It's good to have the band back together. Oh, my gosh.
Michael, it's always good to talk to you, my friend.
What's up, playa, playa?
we spent some time. We had one.
You know, they don't say that at the Donald Trump rallies, by the way, Michael.
Right, exactly. Well, if someone says it, they go, get that guy. It's a weird situation. We've made some magic together over the years, the three of us. Both on and off the air. All right, so let's talk about this. What did I do? Did I just do the right thing or the wrong thing? What did I do?
Well, you did the right thing. You voted. You know, in the final analysis, that's the bottom line. You voted, you participated in the process. You know, only you can put the package or the bow on the package of your vote, why you did it, you know, who you did it for and all of that. At the end of the day, that's the critical part. And that's what's, you know, a lot of folks, and certainly in my neck of the woods, don't seem to be able to get their heads wrapped around is, you know, people are voting for the candidate that they think best represents their values, their ideals, their hopes, whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, for a lot of people tonight, that's going to be Donald Trump.
I know. And you know what I even did? I even tried to play a game with myself today in the voting booth, which, you know, in Chicago you get arrested for. I tried to figure out, you know, where I wanted the delegates to go, because I really am a Kasich guy, but Kasich can't beat Trump in Illinois, so I voted for Cruz with Kasich delegates. And quite honestly, I don't know who I believe in anymore. Here's an interesting little statistic for you gentlemen. The number of Republican ballots being taken in this, which is, you know, a choice state where you go in, you say, I want a Republican or Democratic ballot. You don't have to declare other than to take the ballot. The number of Republicans are up about 25 right now in the city. And I think this is just city of Chicago, up about 25%, and Democratic ballots down 33%.
And that is probably Democrats switching over to vote for Trump.
Yep. Which is going to be very interesting because there's a very highly contested state's attorney's race here. That is a big deal. I think that is going to not favor the incumbent here, because I think what you're seeing is you're seeing a lot of city workers. You're seeing cops and firefighters and, you know, first responders who seem to be kind of tracking with Trump's messaging here.
They're blue collar men and women.
Yeah,
they're on the front lines, and you know, they're looking for you know, a better opportunity for themselves. And you know, they're hitching their wagon of hope to Donald Trump's rhetoric, as we saw play out in 2008 for a lot of new time voters, especially a lot of crossover voters who hitched their wagon to Obama's hope and change. We see now 8 years later where that's gotten us, and a lot of people are frustrated because a lot of that did materialize, largely because, you know, the president never defined what everybody knew what the hope was, but everyone had no idea what the change was. So everybody's change was different.
Right.
Similarly, you know, with Trump, you know, there's just not an election about hope. This is purely an election about change. In other words, we're going to change things from the way they are right now. And he's defining the change, which is a very different mindset for the voters as we see them going into the polls. And I think it'll be easier for him if he sticks to his guns and make the case for the changes before the Congress, because clearly if he wins in November, he will have done so in a fashion against the odds that the Congress and others will, you know, he can pretty much say, hey, this is the way we want to go because the people have spoken, except for Roe. Right. Didn't.
Well, you know, Roe's got that mentality. Sometimes you marry someone because you don't want her to marry someone else. It's a Chicago way we do that.
Yeah. Sure.
Michael, one of the most remarkable things, and I have to say
so
this,
well,
you know, I have to say this, you know, in admiration, if you will, for Donald Trump's abilities as a showman and as a speaker, because here is a guy who has nothing in his life that indicates that he's the least bit interested in the working class ever. He was handed millions of dollars by his father. He's in the 0.0000001%. Nobody denies that he works hard. He's all about Club Mar-a-Lago and all these other places that cost more to join than 99% of Americans make in a year.
Yeah.
All his friends are rich and famous. And yet a lot of working men and women are saying, that's my guy.
He's one of us. I knew the direction of this campaign back in July, August. And you've heard me talk about this before, when there was the focus group and the woman from New Hampshire, working blue-collar mom of two, said, you know, Donald Trump is one of us. That's why she was supporting. And everybody was scratching their head going, what the hell, one of us? I mean, because he's everything you just described. And yet, everyday, you know, workers, minimum wage workers, blue collar workers see him and identify with him because he is not only speaking truth to power, but he's willing to disrupt the system that they've grown frustrated with. That is the key thing right there.
Truth. He's got the lowest fact check rate of any modern candidate for any major office at somewhere around 30%. And people go, he's a straight shooter.
That's your truth. That's not my truth.
He's a straight shooter. And this is my favorite, by the way, New York Times today. New York Times has an interview with Donald Trump's longtime butler. Which tells you, from Palm Beach,
he has a longtime butler. I mean, this is a guy whose gold-plated toilet seat costs more than Bernie Sanders' Prius, and yet,
but Michael,
you're right. It doesn't matter what he does.
That's your truth. That's my truth is this guy's going to fight for me. That's what they. I mean, people genuinely believe that. And look, I mean, this is a guy who's telling you know what we've seen unfold at the rallies, and we talked about this earlier. To me, it was appalling, and I think you know Trump. You know, really needs to be smart, careful, and responsible, and he's none of those things in how he conducts his rallies. But yet and still, particularly given the politics of Illinois, the politics of what we saw over the weekend, it reinforces the argument for him in the minds of a lot of voters because, you know, they listen to the media cackle against him, and they're like, see, he must be doing something right because he's pissing them off, and that's
right.
I mean, what is the narrative that you developed to deal with that? We watched 16 other people stand on the stage for the last 9 months and have been unable to do it to the point where he's going to cut like a hot knife through butter in Florida. He's going to take up Illinois, North Carolina. The only place where he may get some resistance is with Ohio and John Kasich. And even that, I wouldn't be surprised if he pulled it off.
God, you're depressing.
A moment of silence.
I'm going to send you this.
Like
I'm going to text you.
I'm sorry.
I know you have. I know you have. And I have been ignoring your advice for the last 4 months. And I, at my own peril, I am texting you right now.
To you, right. Just kind of. It's funny. I was checking into my hotel, and a woman said to me, you've been calling for this since January. I said, yeah. She said, surprising, no one listened. I was like, yeah, I know a lot of folks like that. I mean, this is not something that it could have been avoided, but no one wanted to avoid it. So here we are.
Okay. I just texted you the picture of Donald, the painting, the oil painting of Donald Trump in his Mar-a-Lago estate.
That's fantastic.
And I want you just to, I just want you to look at that, and I'm gonna put that all up on social media too. And I'm just gonna say, this is the guy. This is the least likely guy. Remember when people said, oh, we don't want the Roosevelts because they're too rich,
yeah.
right?
At
the teeth of the Depression. And well, I mean, you know, maybe you can argue that that worked out, but at least that was a guy who had a sense of the man of the people.
This is someone who's running. In his mind, he's running for king. That's what he's running for, king of the United States. He wants to be the king.
That's true.
But think about what, you know, how Americans have responded to the wealthy in prior elections. 2012 with Mitt Romney, 2008 with John Kerry. I mean, you can go back and you can see where there's been a change somewhere in that span of time in the attitude and how people look at the wealthy, particularly given how the Occupy Wall Street and progressive agenda has so vilified those who make wealth. And you have Bernie Sanders on the other side, basically, if he could draw and quarter anyone who makes over $1 million a year, he would do it.
He's coming up on the program to explain exactly that, by the way, at 4:10 this afternoon.
But Michael, you make a point too. But you know, with John Kerry and Mitt Romney, they have that aristocratic, you know, demeanor.
Yeah.
And even though Trump has more money than the two of them put together, he talks like a guy on the docks, at least.
That's right.
So people go, he's one of us.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, gentlemen, and thank you, Michael. Really, it's really been great. We'll talk to you. I'll talk to you either later this week or early next week. We can continue this conversation as you try to educate me on the new reality in America. Because I'm telling you, if he wins a Republican nomination, I think he's likely to win the presidency.
I keep telling people that because, and particularly my friends on the left, you look at who he's drawing from. You just set up this segment with a very good example of the number of Democrat and independent voters who are switching out, switching over to vote for him in a Republican primary. Now, some people argue, oh, they just want they want Donald Trump as the nominee. Be careful what you wish for.
Exactly right. Yeah. All right, Michael, you enjoy that oil painting I just sent you.
Thank you, sir.
I think you're going to really like it. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You got it.
All right. Thanks.